Matthew 27, starting verse 45. Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them who were standing there, when they heard it, began saying, this man is calling for Elijah. Immediately one of them ran, and taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed, and gave him to drink. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice, and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Now the centurion of those who were with him keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and saw the things that were happening, became very frightened and said, truly, this is the Son of God.
What would you say is the biggest event in your life? Start with a personal thing that's happened to you. What would that be? Maybe a marriage, maybe birth of a child. How many people did that affect in your life? Who else knows about it? What sort of ramifications has it had in your life, and will it have in the future? And then, going beyond just personal now, what's the biggest worldwide event that you've lived through? I think there may be some people here that may have lived through some wars. I know that some of you have. Some of you have participated in some of those wars. Some of you may have been alive even for the Great War, World War II. As far as events like that, how many people did it affect? On what scale was it? What did it cause in the world around us? Well, now, not just that, but think back in history as far as the biggest event you can think of. Secular events, again, wars tend to come to mind. Or maybe it's foundings of different nations. Maybe 1492, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue and discovered this continent, as far as Western Europeans go. But what about even biblical events? And one of the greatest biblical event I could think of is like the flood. I mean, that's on a grand scale. It affected everybody that had lived on the earth at that time. Wiped out everyone except for just 8 people. But I'm going to tell you, and I think you already know this too, that with all those events, every single one of them, they are minor. And they pale in comparison to one event that was truly great and truly awesome. The greatest event ever, and that is what our brother just read about. Jesus Christ giving himself on the cross. Now, as far as the people that witnessed that event, though, would they have considered it the greatest event ever? No, probably not. I would say definitely not, at least at that time. Even the people that were close to him. It certainly wasn't on a global scale, at least obviously, not like the flood. And it wasn't some great war that was involved, at least as far as people could tell, like World War I or World War II, something like that. Nations involved and all that, millions and millions of people. In fact, as far as a lot of people were concerned that were there to witness it, it was really not that big of a deal at all. I mean, it was an execution of this criminal. I mean, as far as the Romans were concerned, I mean, it's a Jewish man that was causing some problems, maybe. People didn't like him. Who was this Jesus? And so whenever we look at Jesus on the cross, what do we see? It was something beyond just a common event, wasn't it? It's amazing how God uses seemingly simple things to accomplish grand, grand things. He displays his wisdom in it all. I need to go back and think about the cross and the audience that would have seen Jesus. We didn't go back in the text and read all of it. And we're not going to go back and read all of it this morning, but you go back to the beginning of chapter 27, it's just where you really start to see Jesus' crucifixion, where he is beaten, and he is led, paraded through the streets, and then he is placed on that cross in between two malefactors. And we know that the scene that takes place here, because all the people that came by and witnessed it, I mean, it was placed on a hill for the people to see because they wanted to make a public example of these criminals. Of course, Jesus being an innocent man, but still, make an example of them. I mean, for instance, the religious leaders, though, the Jewish politicians, really is what they were of the day, what did they see? Whenever they saw Jesus on that cross, what did they see? I mean, he was an object of their hatred. I mean, this was the man that was really in their way. He was someone to get out of their way. He was a stumbling stone for them in that sense. And the scriptures say that. But again, from their perspective, he was a nuisance. And he was somebody to be done away with. If we can get Jesus out of the way, well, then we can really get some stuff accomplished, right? We can get things back to normal, right? We can get everybody settled down and such. But they hated him. They hated him. Why did they hate him? Well, one of the reasons is the people loved him. The people loved him. They didn't, and the people didn't love them. Why didn't they love him? That would have gotten under their skin, right? I mean, I've been serving these people all these years, right? I've given my life of service to them, and here they love this. Who is this guy? A Nazarene? I mean, he's from Nazareth. He's a carpenter's son. Why would they love him and not me? So they hated him for those reasons. They hated him also because what did Jesus do? Jesus took him to the cleaners. I mean, whenever they came and they tried to figure out who this Jesus was and they tried to discredit him and tried to expose him for what they thought, maybe this is a hoaxer or a charlatan or something like that, but Jesus put him to shame. And what did he expose? He exposed their own ignorance. He exposed their own also hypocrisy. He exposed their own shady dealings. He exposed that they really weren't about the truth. They really weren't about God. They really weren't about the people. They were about themselves. Remember what Jesus said? He said, if you're going to be righteous, you want to be in the kingdom of heaven, your righteousness must far exceed that of the Pharisees, and which they were the strict ones, right? He says, which they bind upon men great many ways, but they themselves will not do what, right? So much as lift a pinky's finger with it. But they saw Jesus as an object of hatred and something to get that was in their way that needed to be removed. But who else saw them? I mean, there was also the mob that was there. I mean, we had the mob even back whenever Jesus is standing before Pilate, and there's Barabbas that's offered up as well. What do you have there? You have the mob witnessing all of this. What was Jesus to the mob? I mean, they got caught up in the moment, perhaps. I mean, lots of things you could say about them, I suppose, but blindly following after their leaders. I mean, we know that we read in the Gospels that the leaders stirred them up and got them to call out for Barabbas instead of Jesus, didn't they? Never Pilate would release one of them. Blind leading the blind sort of thing going on, getting caught up in the moment. We also read, though, that whenever they came and they witnessed Jesus on the cross, what did many of the mobsters do? Right? Many of the people in the mob, the crowd, oh, they wagged, shook their heads, wagged their fingers, right? Oh, he was really the Son of God, if he was really somebody great, he'd get himself down now, wouldn't he? Look at him. He's calling for Elijah. So, well, let's wait and see if Elijah is actually going to come and appear. And you see, he's a spectacle. He's an artifact of curiosity for them, right? In many ways, too. But who else was there, though? We have the soldiers. We already mentioned the soldiers a little bit earlier. I mean, who is Jesus? Jewish guy. I mean, another day's work for them. I mean, you know, nail him to the cross, right? We got his leftover garments here. What are we going to do? We're going to gamble for that, right? We got to do something to pass the time, have a little bit of fun with all this, right? Depressing work and whatnot, right? You remember that. Who is Jesus? Dirty Jew, as far as they're concerned. Nobody important. What about the malefactors? What about the criminals? What did they see with Jesus? Now we know that there was ridicule there too. The Gospels, and one of the Gospel accounts says that they both ridiculed him. It says that the malefactors also railed upon him. It's Luke's account that then goes on to say that one of them defends Jesus. I wonder if initially he was railing on Jesus and then he changed his heart. I don't know. Or if the other gospel writers just being more succinct with the description. I'm not sure. But either way, we know one of them. What if he's, Jesus is an opportunity perhaps to save him. It's like, well, if you can save us, then we'll save us. I mean, if you're somebody great, we'll show it, prove it, do something. No. Right, again, it was Jesus to them. To one of them, it was maybe a quick fix, a quick way out. Right? Maybe one last person he could try to put himself over and say, oh, well, at least I'm better than you. I don't know. The other one defended him. The other one defended him. In the end, it was humble. One of the few that we see that looked upon Jesus and saw something unique, because he said, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said those sweet words, I tell you today, you will be with me in paradise. We see that there was another man there. I mean, that our brother just read for us a moment ago, the centurion, whenever he saw all of this take place and he finally saw Jesus breathe his last and he witnessed it all, what did he say? Truly, this is, he was the Son of God. And one of the other gospel writers says, truly, this was a righteous man. This man saw something different in Jesus. The disciples were there. The women were there. What did they see? The man they followed, the man they loved. What did Mary see? Seeing her son up there. You see that all these people, though, that we see at the foot of the cross, all the people that are witnessing the death of Jesus, all the people that are looking up to Jesus, right? We can see the same thing today. I mean, for people. Whenever people look at the cross now, what do they see? When they look up at Jesus, they think of the crucifixion. When they go back and they think of that world event, what do people say? What do they see? Well, for some people, it's, he's a stumbling stone. I mean, he's an object that's in the way. We got to get rid of Jesus. Get him out of the way, because you know what? If we can get rid of Jesus, well, we can really get some stuff done. Jesus is the one that's holding us back. We see that. That's a big push in our culture right now. Jesus is the problem for them. Christians are a problem. They hate Jesus for the same reason that those people hated Jesus back then too. Why? Jesus exposes. He exposes hypocrisy. He exposes error. He exposes lies and misdeeds. And Jesus says, no, you're wrong. You're not right. This is not okay. Jesus has standards and they don't like it. So there are people today that look at Jesus and they hate him. They don't want anything to do with him. For some people, it's like the mob. They see Jesus, and what is Jesus? a spectacle to be looked at, something to be mocked, something to be made fun of, someone that they can hurl insults at, or let's just wait and see. I don't know, let's just wait and see. And it's entertainment, it's a sideshow for them. Entertain it for a little bit, but whenever they're bored, when they're bored with Jesus, then, well, they go on their way and go find something else to bide their time with. What about the people, like the soldiers, who see Jesus, and what do they say? It's indifferent. I mean, it's just another guy, just another religious leader. I mean, just another religion, just a legend, you know, something, a little blip in history, and that's it. I mean, that's in the past, right? That really doesn't mean anything today. You know people like this? You know people like this? You've met people like this? Have you felt this yourself? Maybe not the, you know, seeing Jesus as a, surely not hating Jesus. Right? I don't know. Have we ever thought of Jesus as being in the way of our life? Have we ever thought, well, God just didn't have so many of these rules. Maybe I can have a little more fun. Maybe life would be a little easier. Have we ever thought that, ever felt that? Or like, what about the mob? I mean, you don't mock Jesus, surely. You ever mock Christians? You ever make fun of your brethren? Well, you know, he's so tight. I mean, when he walks, he squeaks kind of thing. You know, I mean. When Jesus said, you do this to the least of me, these, you do it to me too. Or maybe not like that, but maybe, have you ever been bored with Jesus? Like, again, the mob sees Jesus as something that, well, he's a spectacle, he's something to kind of enjoy, pass the time with right now. Well, let's wait and see. I don't know. We'll see if this Jesus thing will work out. Now I'm bored with it now. I'm going to go on. That maybe starts to hit home a little bit more with some of us. We get bored with Jesus. We get bored with Christianity. We get bored with all of this Bible business. And now I'm just going to get my mind on something else. Maybe I'll come back and look a little more at it later. Or like the soldiers, well, being a bit indifferent about it. Oh, it's just another day's work. Oh, it's just another Sunday. It's just it's another one of those things we do. That can happen. And maybe it has happened for you. Never really stopping to think and investigate and realize what is this all about? Because it's not just another day. It's not just another man. It's not just another religious leader. This is the grandest event that ever took place, because this is the removal of sin from mankind. This is the salvation of mankind right here. The destruction of sin, death, and the devil. The answer to all the problems of humanity right here is Jesus Christ. The meaning of it all. Jesus, right here. Truly, like the centurion said, when we stop and we look and we observe and we see Jesus and we get out of ourselves and we stop, truly this was the Son of God. Truly this is the Son of God. Truly this is wondrous and grand. How could we come to any other conclusion? Not believing cunningly devised fables, of course, like Peter said, but we look at the evidence, we read the evidence, we read the eyewitness accounts, we stop and we ponder, like our brother prayed this morning with the changing of the season, right? There has to be a God. None of this makes sense without there being a designer and a God. We stop and think a little bit more about, well, if there is no God, there's no right, there's no wrong. There is no morality, there is no meaning without God. There must be a God with all of this. And we stop and we look at more evidence and come to the conclusion. The God of the Bible, Jesus, this is the truth, the way, and the life. And so what do we see then? We take another step then, and we get into the realm that now, going from not just a recognition, logically, this is true, this is the Son of God, but we step then into the realm of the disciples, of the women who followed and ministered. And what is Jesus? An object of love. The one that we follow. The one that we leave everything for. We forsake it all to follow him. And we stand next to him. And we fail. Yes, we falter like the disciples. We get scared. But we come back. We come back. And we stick with him. We fall asleep in the garden when he tells us to stay awake, but he wakes us up and we try again. We stick with him. Why? Because he's the Son of God, because we love him, because he first loved us, because we realize that what Jesus is doing here is an act of love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. He became sin so that my sins could be removed. He took on the punishment for me. He brought life through his own death. He's the way. He's it. He's everything. And we start to step then into the realm of Mary too, where Mary has a unique perspective, not only because she's the mother of Jesus, but you remember, you go back and there's a phrase that Luke uses about Mary. All the things, you remember? What does she say? She sees these things, but she keeps them in her heart. She ponders them in her heart. When the angel came to her, Gabriel, said, "You're going to be with child," and explained what all this was and her part of it. Whenever the shepherds came that night, when the wise men soon followed after, she witnessed the miracle at the wedding, right, in Cana, turning the water into wine. When she saw his preaching and his teaching. Well, even before that, remember when he was a lad, 12 years old, right, in the temple and all that? And they lost him for 3 days? We start to be like Mary. And we take all these things in and we keep them and we lock them in our heart. And we ponder them in our heart. And they become part of us. We become intertwined with Jesus. We become one with him. We look up to Jesus, and what do we see then? We see everything. Again, the whole meaning of it all. An event that many people at the time, they didn't notice it. It wasn't a big deal to them. For some of them, it was devastating. For others, it was not a big deal. And other people around them, they didn't even know. What about those brethren in Thessalonica and Ephesus and all around the world? They had no idea. They had no idea what had taken place. Oh, what a wondrous, wondrous thing had happened that day. And so, my friend, that's where I leave it with you this morning, is what is the greatest event? Who is this Jesus? And when you look up at the cross, what do you see? Who is he to you? And not just in time past, but right now. Who is he to you? And be honest with yourself. Be honest with God. My friend, if you know that Jesus is your Savior, if you know that truly this is the Son of God, then why don't you take that next step? Do you love it? Do you love the Son of God? Do you love him for what he did for you? Then why not show that love? And why not begin that journey of that relationship with Jesus, becoming one of his own? Jesus Christ himself said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." Well, my friend, maybe Jesus is the object of love for you. You've done that. Maybe right now, you've fallen asleep in the garden. Jesus is trying to rouse you and wake you. Won't you wake up? And won't you stand watch with him again and be with him? and come and stand at that cross and wait for him. My friend, if we can help you this morning to encourage you or to help you become a Christian, won't you come as we stand, as we sing.